Good morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order February 22nd, 2021. With me today is Senator Olson, Senator Wilson, Senator Hoffman, myself, Stedman, Senator Bishop's excused, and the other members will be joining us shortly. They're off at other meetings. Today we're going to have a presentation from the Department of Education and Early Development dealing with major maintenance and school construction. The first presentation will be from Heidi Thrashner, Director of Finance and Support Services. If she could introduce herself for the record, who she represents, and start the presentation.
Good morning, Chair Stedman. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. For the record, my name is Heidi Teschner, and I am the Director of Finance and Support Services with the Department of Education and Early Development. This morning, I'm joined by Tim Merrick, our facilities manager, and we'll be providing the committee with an overview of the school construction and major maintenance grant fund programs and school debt reimbursement. Next slide, please. So we should be on slide two.
We are on slide two.
Okay. Slide two just provides the committee with the mission and vision statements for public education in Alaska, as well as the purpose of the Department of Education and Early Development. Our vision statement is taken directly from Alaska Statute 1403015, and the department's purpose is to provide information, resources, and leadership to support the mission of an excellent education for every student every day. Next slide, please.
Go ahead and continue.
Okay. On slide three is the Alaska's Education Challenge. So over the last 4 years, parents, students, educators, policymakers, tribal leaders, partner organizations, and local school boards have stepped forward to answer Alaska's call to action to create a shared vision for improving our public education system. The result is Alaska's Education Challenge. In order to meet our state's educational challenges, we are addressing our public education system through the five shared priorities outlined on this slide. At the Department of Education and Early Development, these five shared priorities guide our daily work, and every program we administer supports one or more of these priorities. Next slide, please.
Okay, go ahead and next slide.
Beginning on slide four, it's provided to help the committee understand that there's been a lot of school capital funding in the state's history. And as shown here, we've identified three basic participants in that. First is the federal government, and they've had a huge presence. Second, the state of Alaska has also been a strong proponent and component of school capital funding, which is not true in every state, but is the case in Alaska. That funding has come through grants, the school construction and major maintenance, and started in approximately 1970, and has been funded by a variety of mechanisms. The general obligation bonds of the state have been used in the past to support school capital funding. That was in 2003 and 2011, as well as different types of revenue bonds. And as noted here, there were 3 years, so 1999, 2001, and 2002, in which the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation issued revenue bonds against anticipated revenue that they would be receiving in order to fund capital projects as they were appropriated by the legislature. And then there is the school debt reimbursement, which has been around since 1971. In the early years through 1983, this program was under the Department of Revenue, and it came to the Department of Education in 1983, and since then the department has been administering this program. The program has always been a proportion of local debt that has been reimbursed annually, and those funds have come through the state's operating budget. The local educational agencies or municipalities have also been a strong component of the school capital funding in the state of Alaska. And we don't want to forget that as much as the state has put forward, districts have also put money forward in support of their school capital projects. Those can come from their capital reserves within the local school district, or from municipal debt or other sources of revenue that might contribute out of their general fund for the general maintenance and upkeep of their school facilities that they own and operate. If there's no questions, we can proceed to slide five.
Yep. Go ahead and continue.
The graph on slide 5 provides the committee with a historical look at the funding from all fund sources for the school construction and major maintenance grant funds, the school debt reimbursement program, as well as other grants from fiscal year 1975 through fiscal year 2021, and illustrates the strong presence of school capital projects and funding that has been a part of the state's process since 1975. Of the total approximately $6.2 billion in funding appropriated for these programs, as recorded in the department's database of school funding, school debt reimbursement, the blue portion of the chart, represents approximately $3.1 billion, or 51% of the total. This amount is determined by using the value of the project that was approved for debt. So the capital investment of the project value is what's being represented here. The next biggest piece is the department's grants, which are the school construction and major maintenance grants, and represented in the orange portion of the chart. This is approximately $2.4 billion, or 39% of the total. This is the total amount of state dollars that have been appropriated by the legislature for school projects. The green portion of the chart is other grants in approximately $588 million, or 10% of the total. This includes grants which have been provided to the state through other departments, such as the Department of Administration and the Department of Transportation. So these are non-Department of Education grants that make up this 10%. And finally, the really small red portion is federal grants, and that's approximately $28 million or 0.5% of the total. And the main purpose of this slide is to illustrate that there are different ways to fund schools, with school debt reimbursement being about half and almost 40% coming through the grant program. If there are no questions, we can move to slide 6.
Yep, next slide.
Similar to the graph on slide 5, this graph provides the committee with a historical look at the funding over the nearly five-decade period for all fund sources but by district type. So whether it's city, borough, district, or a municipal statewide appropriation, or an regional educational attendance area, also known as REAAs, from 1975 through 2021. Of the $6.2 billion in funding appropriated, city and borough school districts have received approximately $4.1 billion, or 67%. Regional educational attendance areas have received approximately $2 billion, or 33%. And there have been multiple statewide appropriations of approximately $21.2 million, or 0.3%. And a good example of this was a statewide appropriation for asbestos remediation that happened throughout the state, and that appropriation would have funded projects in both district types. In addition, just for the committee's information, regional educational attendance areas were established in 1974. And those are areas that don't have a local government to take responsibility for education. And there are 19 REAA school districts in Alaska.
Okay, next slide.
Go ahead.
Next slide. Slide 7.
And now I'm going to pass this presentation over to Tim Merrig, who will continue our conversation this morning.
Thank you. This is Tim Merrig, Facilities Manager at the Department of Education. Thank you for giving us an opportunity to brief the committee this morning. Every year, the department provides a summary of recent school capital funding. This was a required report that came through legislation in 2010 and is known as the SB 237 report. The first report was provided to the legislature in 2013, and the current report was just delivered last week for representing the information through the end of 2020. In that report, you can see that in the period of time that we've been doing that since February 2013, there is a total of $1,432,830 in funding that has been provided. Similar to the previous graphs, this information is best understood when we are able to compare the project value of school capital investment for debt projects, and then the state share value of grant projects. With debt projects, the actual financing costs are a different number, but they don't compare very well to grant project costs, so that's why we show project value for debt projects. $1.4 billion in the reporting period. As mentioned, the report that was due by the end of February has been provided and delivered to the governor's office and Senate and House. And in this report, all of the analysis and tables depend on the detail listings that are in Appendix A and B, and those are available, of course, at the end of the report. And they list projects by district so that you can see the representation of funding and the numbers of project by district, and then every project that's included in the information of the report. So this is our recent SB 237 report, handout number one for the committee.
Okay, Mr. Merrick, I think we want to pick the pace up here. I think the committee is pretty familiar with the process. We're going to slide eight.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Stedman. Slide eight. So the current funding options that the state uses through statute are funding the school construction grant fund, the major maintenance grant fund. These are statutory funds identified in AS 1411. And then more recently in history, in 2010, the regional education attendance area and small municipal district fund. This is an indexed fund that is tied to the amount of debt reimbursement that the state provides through the debt reimbursement funding mechanism through a formula and a modifier, which it takes a percentage of city and borough schools times 0.244. That's the calculation for how much goes in the REAA fund. And then finally, of course, we have the school debt reimbursement program as it's outlined through that fund in AS 1411.
Next slide.
Next slide, if we're ready.
Go ahead and slide number nine.
In statute, projects are identified by categories. This is as per the legislature, and we operate within these basic six categories, or a seventh picks up any additional needs. The purpose of these categories, as they're laid out, is to identify what kind of investments the state is looking to make in school capital, areas of school capital. And in the following slides, I'll be able to show you how these categories correspond to the different funds. If there are no questions, we can advance.
Next slide.
Categories that fall on the school construction list are highlighted here for the committee and include those that are safety and life safety situations, those that, as we call, house students that would otherwise be unhoused. This is the statutory language for schools that are over capacity. And so that is a separate category of project and results in additions or new schools. And then also on the school construction grant list, a project that would rehabilitate for the purpose of improving the instructional program would fall there, and also the catch-all category G for another need not specified. That completes the slide 10.
We have a question from Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Merrick, on this slide, item A, avert imminent danger or correct life-threatening situations. I met with the Department of Education last week regarding the problems the community of Napakiak is facing. Their school, the district believes their school is in imminent danger of falling into the Kuskokwim, and once it's, they feel that within 2 to 3 years that that situation is going to be a reality. So would you say that the conditions that exist in the community of Napakiak would be covered under A, or where would that be covered? Because there needs to be some planning done so that there's a continuity of education to the students of Napakiak, and if from my calculations, if we don't start that planning process now, the students are going to have to be flown out, or some other conditions need to be met so that the continuity of education for the students of Napakiak are achieved.
Thank you, through the chair, Senator Hoffman. Yes, we are aware of the needs of the school and the problems that are facing that school through erosion in Napakiak. That project would primarily be a Category A project and would fall on the school construction list. It's the list where we place any school project that is rebuilding or adding new space, and that would be the proper category for that project.
Follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be working with the administration to assure that the continuity of education exists in the community of Napakiak, and I'm sure that is the same intent that the department has.
Okay, go ahead and continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On slide 11, we are highlighting category C, D, and E of the statutory definitions of project types. These are projects that would end up on the major maintenance grant fund list each year, and are, as you can expect, projects that are trying to preserve and protect our existing investment in schools and keep those functioning well for the purpose that they need to serve. Also in this category, we would take projects that are primarily aimed at achieving an operating cost savings, and there are several projects that come to us in that category.
Okay, next page.
Slide 12 shows a matrix of the relationship between project types, entity types, and funding categories, and is a very useful way to understand who is eligible for different types of funding and where those limitations might be and what type of project falls on which type of list. So if we would look at the project types first, you can see that for a school construction project, it is eligible for funding from the REAA fund, also from the school construction and major maintenance funds, and debt reimbursement would also be able to fund projects that are similar to a school construction project in their definitions in statute. If the projects on the debt reimbursement requests are qualifying for the school space that's involved in the project, then those projects are able to be reimbursed, eligible to be reimbursed by the state at 70% for the debt service. If they are including space for which there is not, they do not qualify for based on 1411J4, then they would qualify for reduced funding at 60%. As an illustration of major maintenance, when you come to the that project type, when a project is eligible for funding from that fund, it would have to have no new space, or the project would need to move up into the yes column of school construction if new space was included. Now, interestingly, for entity types, REAAs are available eligible for projects and funds from the REAA fund, of course, and as well the School Construction Major Maintenance Grant Fund, but are not able to access debt reimbursement. City boroughs and small municipalities also, four of those districts qualify for the definition of a small municipal district. They also can have access to the REAA fund in addition to REAA districts. And those same districts, those four, are also eligible for school construction and major maintenance grant funds and could be eligible for debt if they could sell a debt instrument in support of their project. To date, through the SB 3237 report, so since 2011, zero of those small municipalities have been able to access that funding mechanism. And finally, the entity type of city and borough district, they are not eligible for funding of projects through the REAA fund, and that consists of 30 districts. They are eligible to get on the state's school construction grant fund or major maintenance grant fund priority lists, and they also, of course, have access to debt reimbursement funding when that funding is available. And in the period of the SB 237 report, 13 of the 30 eligible city borough districts have been approved for projects in that funding type. That completes the slide. Any questions?
So let the record reflect that Senator Von Imhoff has joined us. Okay, next slide, please. Slide 13.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. I'd like to just give the committee a brief overview of our CIP eligibility criteria. Again, this is these are criteria that are developed out of statute. So our statewide capital improvement program, project program, is a statutory program. And here are six elements that must be in place before a project can gain eligibility for state aid under any of our funding programs. There has to be an adequate six-year capital plan, a functioning fixed asset inventory system. All districts are required to provide proof of adequate property insurance before they can be eligible for funding. And since 1994, a criteria to ensure that districts are maintaining and have an adequate facility management program has been in place, or those districts remain ineligible if they can't meet the basic criteria that was outlined in the statute when that provision was introduced by the legislature. Number five, the projects have to be assessed as being capital projects and not maintenance. Maintenance is the responsibility of the local education entity. And finally, upon award of any grant, a participating share must be met from the local entity. Project eligibility. Any questions? I'd be happy to answer.
Next slide.
For grant participation and eligibility, the timeline is that every year, districts are given the opportunity to submit grant applications for school capital improvement projects, and those projects must be available to us before September 1st annually. And all of the criteria for the application process and how the applications are scored for priority purposes is outlined on our website. Each year, the application is reviewed by the Bond Reimbursement and Grant Review Committee and established, actually, by that statutory committee and issued to school districts. There are there's always a constant process of trying to ensure that application and its processes that reflect the statutes and regulations are effective, and so we annually review that with the committee. Projects are ranked according with criteria that's established in AS 1411, and we also expand that and clarify some of those areas in regulation. Again, we've talked already about the eligibility criteria, so those are the same that I've listed on the previous slide, but we again assess those prior to each year so that we know whether a district is going to have is going to be able to be listed on the statewide list. Priority lists are then created as we review the scope and cost of each project and apply the criteria that have been established through the Bond Reimbursement and Grant Review Committee for prioritizing these projects according to several categories, about 17 different categories. And then the initial lists, after they are prioritized by the department, are released on November 5th. And there is a robust reconsideration and appeal process that districts have in case they feel the department erred in any of their determinations. And so we invite that and use the next few months following that initial list to finalize a list for the upcoming fiscal year.
Okay, next slide.
This graphic shows the trends in participation from school districts. And so you can see the number of applications that have been received in the period of FY 2012 through 2022, this past September. And the trend has had a downward sort of trend line through and running into FY 20, and since then has picked up again to the pre 20 levels, but record amounts of applications were back in the early 2000s, and we haven't ever returned to that level of district participation in this. So this past year, there were 108 major maintenance projects that were submitted for the department and 17 school construction projects. And really just an interesting aside, for the first time in modern history, I guess, since 1994 in this new application, the department and districts achieved zero ineligible projects. That's always a goal that we have, that we don't send projects back that are ineligible. That means that districts and the department are communicating well about the requirements that we earlier talked about with the committee about eligibility. Any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Yeah, if you could follow up with this chart and put some numerics on it. The list is for grant applications. It'd be nice to see what the dollar amount of each of those areas are. So we can...
All right, absolutely, Senator Stedman. Thanks for that request. We can move to the next slide. Has some of, I think, what you are anticipating.
I think the next slide is grant awards. It'd be nice to see.
Yes.
Yes,
these are grant awards, not grant requests.
It'd be nice to see what the requests are compared to the awards. So go on to slide 16, please.
Thank you, Senator Stedman, Chair Stedman. Before we move to that, I will say that in the SB 237 report, there is a table that shows the total value during the time period we've been tracking that funding for major maintenance and school construction projects and their dollar amounts. And we can look at that with you if needed. And I'll move ahead until you, unless you say otherwise. Grant awards, FY 2012 through 2021. Again, a graphic that shows the various award years that the legislature has made, appropriations that have been available, and the department has made, some from opportunities through completed projects whose funds have lapsed back to the funds that we've been able to the Major Maintenance and School Construction Grant Fund and the REAA Fund, that we've been able to then make new grant allocations under the statute's provision for the following or a subsequent fiscal year. I have no real other comments on this. You can see the different categories of major maintenance, school construction that we're tracking here, and the REAA funds. So the three funds that we have in statute are represented through these grant awards through 2021, which received a small portion of major maintenance funding appropriated through the legislature in FY20 was used on a project along with some available balance to fund one project in FY21.
Okay, we have a question from Senator Hoffman.
Just a comment, Mr. Chairman. In fiscal years FY 2019 and 2020, the Alaska Legislature did fund grants to the REAAs, and those dollar amounts were subsequently vetoed by the governor. So it would be good if you put asterisks on there and show exactly how much the legislature has been funding. You know, I think that it's important to point out that the legislature has been keeping with its commitment to fund grants for the REA fund, and those could show up as a negative amount in the amount that the governor had vetoed from it. So I think it's important that that be shown on this slide.
We can have you update that. You might as well go back to 2012 so we have on the slide we have a complete data set of any alterations from the submitted budget to the governor compared to the executed budget. Okay, I see no other questions.
Senator Hoffman noted for our additions to this slide. Thank you.
We'll go on to slide 17.
At this point, I will let Heidi Teschner step back in. She's going to walk the committee through the debt reimbursement process with some additional information.
Good morning again. For the record, this is Heidi Teschner, Director of Finance and Support Services. So on slide 17, it goes through the debt reimbursement program and the eligibility. It is established in statute, Alaska Statute 14-11-100. There is, similar to the grant application, there is one for debt service. It is a very, very similar application, and that is available on our website. The programs that districts that and municipalities that submit for reimbursement under school district or school debt reimbursement, they're not ranked projects. So it's based on the we review what they have submitted, but they're not ranked against each other. And there are three eligibility categories that are shown in number four on this slide. So all types of cities except third class cities, all types of boroughs, and districts must submit a six-year plan, a fixed asset inventory system, adequate property loss insurance, and a preventative maintenance and facilities management program that the department certifies. If there are no questions, we can go on to slide 18.
Yes, slide 18, please.
Slide 18 just provides the committee with the debt reimbursement trends. So from, you know, the 71 to 1977, we had a reimbursement rate of 100%. That changed to 90% in 78 through 83, down to 80% in 84 to 94, 1995 to 1990, there was 70%. And then in 2000 to 2015, it went to 70 and 60%. As this committee knows, we are in a moratorium on the school debt reimbursement program. And that first moratorium was put in place in SB Senate Bill 64, and that was first through fiscal year 2020, and then got extended last session in HB 106, and now is moratorium is in place through fiscal year 2025. So starting in fiscal year 2026, if the program comes back online as intended, it'll be a 50%, 40% state share on debt projects.
Okay, next slide.
Next slide. And this slide just provides the committee with a look at the amount of the value of the projects that's been reimbursed under each of the percentages, as the majority of it has been a 70% reimbursement.
Okay, next slide.
If there's no questions, we'll move on to slide 20. And this provides the committee with representation of all of the projected outstanding debt service to be paid on approved
debt reimbursement projects and the amount of debt service associated with those, and then how that will reduce over time as the debt service matures and is paid off by the municipality. And this is assuming that the school debt reimbursement program is funded at 100%. This basically, this graph represents the amount that state will reimburse districts and municipalities for projects that meet the criteria for their bond sale prior to the January 2015 moratorium date. Based on the current program and assuming no new debt is approved by voters, even if the moratorium, if the moratorium is lifted, fiscal year 2039 is projected to be the last year of a state payment under this program. Handout number two provides the committee with the numbers behind this graph, and that handout shows the total by grantee, district, municipality, and fiscal year, so for fiscal year 21 through fiscal year 2040. And the total outstanding statewide liability from fiscal year 2020 through fiscal year 2039 is, if fully appropriated, is $608.5 million. If there are no questions, we can move on to the next slide.
If I could have you give us a little update on this slide also and back it up 10 years or so we could kind of see where we've been, and then we can see here where we're going. And I'd like to have you also help me with the state liability portion, because it's subject to appropriation. So what liability are you referring to?
Chair Steadman, that's the state's portion of what we're saying. If the program is fully appropriated, fully funded, the department, based on statute, would be paying that portion of the financing that is based on their eligibility and proration rate.
So it's not, I guess we're working on the term liability. I guess it's not an actual liability.
Obligation.
Or are we subject to claims from short funding at the last several years?
Chair Steadman, based on statute, if the funds are appropriated, we will pay on them. If they are not appropriated, the state is not going to, my understanding, and I'm not a lawyer and we can get clarification, the state is only liable the state is liable for when the funds are appropriated to make those payments out to the districts and municipalities. It is subject to appropriation.
Right, I think you might want to change the label of that. Senator Von Imhoff.
So, thank you. I just wanted to clarify. So there is a state statute that you've referenced in your presentation that the state has an obligation per the statute to pay at various different percentages for the school outstanding debt. But as Senator Steadman pointed out, whether it be through veto or short funding, it has not been paid, which means we're not following statute. Is that correct?
Through the chair. So Alaska statute 14-11-100C, subpart C, provides, and if it works for the committee, I can read that statute. But it says that the funds may be appropriated annually by the legislature. So if the funds are not, if there's not sufficient funding to fully pay for school debt reimbursement through the appropriation, the department will reduce those payments pro rata. If there is no appropriation provided, then the department will not pay for those obligations. It is subject to appropriation. And it's a may appropriate. It's not, the way I read it, it's not a requirement.
Right, but just for clarity of those listening at home, there's a difference between what the legislature appropriates and what the sitting governor at any given time signs off on the executed budget. So those numbers sometimes are not the same. And in this case, I think we have a policy difference with the administration on how to deal with the debt reimbursement and the REAA. So I think just for a clarity issue, there's a difference between what the legislature appropriates and what's in the final budget.
signed by the governor.
We have any other questions on slide 20? Okay, we'll go on to slide 21.
Okay. Again, slide 21 is providing the committee with a look at the school debt reimbursement program and how it's been funded since 1976. And so the program has been fully funded 32 of the past 46 years, and there were significant shortfalls through the 80s and some small adjustments through the 1990s. There were veto adjustments in fiscal year 2017 and fiscal year 2020, and as the committee knows, the program was vetoed at 100% in fiscal year 2021. We do provide in handout number 3 and the look at a different view of these same numbers, probably an easier to review format than what's on this presentation slide. And then the fiscal year 22 governor's budget proposes funding the school debt reimbursement program at 50%. And we've also provided handout number 4 that shows the breakdown of the fiscal year 2022 anticipated debt totals by municipality, both if funded at 100% as well as the governor's proposed 50% funding level. And there are 18 municipalities projected to receive the funding in fiscal year 2022. If there are no slides, we can proceed to slide 22.
We have any questions on 21? Okay, we'll go on to slide 22.
So slide 22 addresses the debt proceeds and refunding. So after the initial bonds are sold, the department identifies how much of the approved projects are funded by the new bond. There could be other elements in an approved municipal bond that are non-school related, so we do our due diligence in establishing out the bond portion that is the portion that is only for the approved projects under Alaska Statute 1411-100. And then we set up reimbursement rates and prorations as needed for their particular bond sales. The proceeds to that reimbursement are based on the debt schedules and payments that are provided to the department and subject to appropriation through the operating budget. Any prorations on bonds are based on approved project reimbursement rates in accordance with Alaska statute. Our process also allows for bonds to be refunded, so if desired by the municipality or the borough, bonds can be refunded. The refunding of current bonds must follow the requirements in Alaska Statute 1411-100J2. So even if the bonds had a maturity date of the minimum of 10 years, you might still find an adjustment to the chart on slide 20 if the bond is refunding and there are additional savings. It's important to note that the refunding is only eligible if there's going to be a savings to the state. So in addition, the refunding can also extend the timeline for when a bond is paid off. The department evaluates refundings by comparing the annual debt service of the refunding package to the original debt service of the bond or bonds that are being refunded. But again, it has to be a savings to the state. If there are no questions on slide 22, we can proceed.
Okay, seeing none, we'll go on to 23.
So slide 23 just provides the committee with a summary of today's conversations of the three funding options as they're provided as side-by-side comparisons. And we've spoken to much of this today, so I won't address anything, but I wanted to make a note that so the first column is the Regional Educational Attendance Area and Small Municipal School District School Fund, which is available to all 19 school districts and the 4 small municipal school districts. And the middle column is the School Construction and Major Maintenance Grant Fund, which are available to all districts. Wanted to note that with these two columns, the funding provided under them, the grants, we pay the state's share of the actual project cost. So we're looking at the real dollars associated with a project's construction, overhead equipment, and other expenses. The third column is the school debt reimbursement, which, as noted earlier, is only available to a municipality that has the ability to bond. The slight variation from the grants is under the school debt reimbursement. We are not paying for the cost of the actual project, but rather the cost of financing that project. I want to also note that the fourth gray row addresses the participating share. So for REAs and Small Municipal School District Fund, all REAs have a 2% participating share with
which may not seem like a lot, but on a $50 million rural project, that's on $1 million participating share. And then the four small municipal school districts carry a different participating share rate between ranging between 10 and 20%. And then the participating share for all districts follows Alaska Statute 1411-008 and ranges between 2 and 35%. And there are more districts now at 35% than were a decade ago.
Okay, next page.
The numbers for the participating share for school debt reimbursement on this slide really should be the reverse of what's shown. The actual share, the total local share is actually 40% and 30% respectively, and the 60 and 70% are the state share. And when the moratorium of the program ends, which is currently June 30th of 2025, so restarting in fiscal year 2026, the local share will be 60% if not eligible for space, and 50 for all others, and the state share will be 40% and 50% respectively. If there are no questions on slide 23, we can proceed to 24.
Yes, go on to 24, please.
24, we're just providing the committee with some additional supplementary handouts and some extra resources. Four handouts provided to you. We're providing both the school construction and major maintenance lists and the project descriptions in handouts 5 through 8, and they are both listed in rank order. The total state share of the 17 raked school construction projects is $162.3 million, and the total state share of the 108 ranked major maintenance projects is $187.3 million. And all of those handouts are also available on the department's website. Wanted to point out that we are providing a link to the facilities page, and that first bullet under there for the school facility database. Just wanted to let the committee know that there is a link on the website to this database where you can access data on the gross square footage, age, and other building information for school facilities in Alaska. The building data is broken down by the original construction and subsequent additions to each building, and you can search by district name or attendance area. And also on the facilities webpage, I just wanted to let the committee and the public know that the facilities section has a listserv where you can sign up and receive email notifications regarding Alaska Statute 1411 program notices, facilities-related regulations and publications, and bond reimbursement and grant review committees. And that, Chair Stedman, the last slide, 25, is just our contact information, and that concludes our presentation. But we'd be happy to answer any questions the committee may have.
Yeah, we're going to take a look at the school construction grant, handout number 5. So you want to highlight some of these projects in here, why they're in here, and if these projects are in the budget or not in the budget?
So currently, the only funding in the budget is the REAA Small Municipal School District transfer of about $17 million. None of the school construction projects are currently funded through the budget. There is the bond, the general obligation bond bill that puts $25 million towards major maintenance. And I'm going to ask Tim to provide some highlights of some of the projects on the school construction list.
Right, because I want to go through both these lists.
Okay. Tim?
Yes, thank you, Heidi. Thank you, Chair Stedman. On the school construction list, we also have a synopsis of each project on this list that's provided as one of the handouts available to you. So that is a good resource for basic data that is associated with each of these projects. It gives you sizes of space that are being considered for the school, student populations, and as well as costs and things of that nature. So the top project on the school construction list as the as a replacement school in Hollis, and that deficient school is severely undersized and was moved on the site from use elsewhere in the district, and is a significantly aged building. Its foundation consists of some cedar logs and rounds as such, and is a building that's in poor shape and overcrowded. The REAA fund was able to provide a planning grant for this project in 2020, FY 2020, and that was what is shown as the prior funding for this project of $686,000. That design is underway.
The next one, number two.
The school project in Nunavichok, Lower Kuskokwim School District at the Anatobolik Memorial K-12 School, is a renovation addition project for that community and that facility and school needs there. The project is scoring high primarily because it is basically 100% overcrowded. I think the current year population projections, which we go out 5 years past the anticipated date of occupancy, are showing that at about 190%, but it's hovering right there at double the number of students that the facility could be reasonably expected to accommodate for size. And this project also has some infrastructure needs developed with it. The renovation is very extensive and heavy. The current building is a 1990s era building and is in need of a lot of additional work.
Hey, we have a question from Senator Von Imhoff.
So, thank you. I see a couple, one, two, three, four from lower, five from Lower Kuskokwim. Are students in the Lower Kuskokwim district in-person school right now, or did they spend a period of time doing distant learning and tele-education due to the pandemic, or what's the status of that district?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, I'm not positive for each one of these communities. The district allows each one of them to basically make a determination of the, I believe, 23 communities in that district. So it could be different for each one of them. And I'm not sure right now, like, for instance, in Nunavichok or any of the other ones represented here, but we would certainly be happy to find that out. Would you be interested in particularly the ones that are listed in the construction list, or do you need a more complete rundown than that?
Follow-up?
I just – thank you, through the chair. I just feel just as a whole – the pandemic really has spun education delivery on its head, and perhaps maybe sort of a broader discussion of how have the different school districts around Alaska coped with it, both on a local level, I guess individual schools per a district level, what has been the broadband deficits or needs in each of these areas. And does it make sense to continue doing these large school projects going forward? Is that something that we need, or is that something that your department has looked at? And only because when I just had a presentation, a subcommittee today with the Health and Social Services, they are paring down their 3,000 workers by having many of them engage in telework. And they boasted today about how their lease space is considerably different, and they're saving a lot of money for the state of Alaska, and they're providing workstations for employees to periodically come in and check in, not on a daily basis, but on an as-needed basis or periodic basis. Is that something that we may want to do with the education system? Does it make sense? I'm just posing the question.
So, Mr. Merrick, if you could help the committee also, I'd like to know how many years these projects have been on the list. I see you got them ranked. It'd be nice to have an idea how long they've been around on a nice, simple, easy chart.
Certainly, Senator Steadman, I don't have that information available to me right now, but we can make that available, and it probably would be a good thing to add to our summary statements of each project as well. So we'll look forward to collecting that information.
Right. Some of us have a concern that with the not fulfilling the obligation for full bond debt reimbursement, the school districts are not going to be so apt to build new schools and do other projects. So there is some concern going forward what the areas of the state are going to look like that have growing population of children dealing with the schools versus other areas like the one I represent, which frankly needs more kids than more, generally speaking, than more school brick and mortar capacity. So do we have other questions? Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking through this list and looking through, I guess it's handout five that gives the project descriptions for these things to be in FY22. Are these then going to be reimbursement? Because you have, I think, five projects on this list that say that they've been completed. How does that work in terms of a future FY22 budget?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, yes, the statutes and regulations for our program do provide for an opportunity for reimbursing a district if they reach a point where they can make an investment or must make an investment due to the urgency of need, but have not been able to access state aid for that. They can remain on the list for consideration of getting that expenditure reimbursed. And the regulations provide for that to happen for expenditures made 36 months prior to the time that that project was first placed on the priority list.
All right. Thank you.
We have a question from Senator Von Imhoff and Senator Hoffman.
Thank you. So just following up on that, if the state doesn't come forward with funding, then who's holding the bag?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, the local funding that might be provided for this from any school district, would come from, funding reserves that they have had to commit. To my knowledge, our funding for school operations doesn't include sufficient fundings for capital investment. So we are expecting that there are some, other funds or operational funds that have been diverted into making some of these improvements. Municipalities and boroughs, have opportunity to invest from other funds, from their general funds, into school facilities as well. So if I understand about, who's holding the bag, the entity making the first investment is on, has made that investment pending an opportunity to receive reimbursement.
So just for clarity, they got a 36 month look back?
Chair Steadman, expenditures that occurred 36 months prior to them submitting the project to the department. And then of course, from that point, those, what we accept as eligible expenditures could remain on the list until such time as the project rose to a point of funding.
Okay. Senator Hoffman, you had a question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Looking at number 12, dovetailing on Senator Von Imhoff's question about COVID, the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta has the highest rate of COVID in the state and continue even higher than those in the community of Bethel that I represent. And the question that I have on item 12, this is an appropriation request from the community of Kangiganuk. And it is for water storage and treatment. With the problems that we're facing with COVID, I wonder if the department can look at whether or not particularly this item can be funded with COVID funds to avert some of the high incidence of COVID In the community of Congiganuck, it seems as though we've seen many different appropriations that are not even clearly as related to the spread of COVID. And it's clear that students having the ability to wash their hands and have fresh water to address the spread of COVID is directly related to the issue of addressing COVID. So I'm wondering if the department could see if this project can be funded utilizing COVID dollars. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And also, when you take a look at that and get back to us, I'd like you to get back to us with a comparison here on these projects that are funds that are already expensed, so we can have an idea what's in the 36-month look back. Also, there's a school outside of, I think, Fairbanks that has a drinking water issue. Are you familiar with that?
Chair Stedman, I am not aware of a water issue in a school in that district that's been identified to the department.
Okay, we're going to have a brief at ease. Come back on the record. It's Chalkeetsik. Are you familiar with Chalkeetsik?
Chair Stedman, yes. I am familiar with the school facility and the water issues in Chalkeetsik.
And you want to highlight
that? Project has, project need was identified by the Yukon Flats School District several years ago and has actually been on the department's list in the past. And we would love to see the situation out there with the water issue resolved on that with that school. Unfortunately, at this time, the Yukon Flats School District has not met all the eligibility requirements for participation in the CIP grant list, but we are working with them diligently and have been for the last couple of years on trying to address those deficiencies so that they can get their projects back on the list.
Okay, if you could help the committee understand the deficiency issue, if you could get back to the committee on the history of that project, when it was on the list, when it was off the list, and then the deficiency list that they need to work on to bring that water issue to a conclusion, would be helpful.
Absolutely. Sure, Devin.
We have other questions on the grant-funded construction list before we go on. I just have one other broader request from the department. If there's projects like the previous one I just mentioned that were on the list and then dropped off, either due to us lack of funding it and they just got tired of waiting, or they figure that we're possibly not going to fund it, and reluctant, so we can get kind of reluctant to, you know, put the package together so we can get an idea of the pent-up demand. I know it's going to be kind of a crystal ball guess from the department, but if you can try to give us a feel for that, would be helpful. Any other questions?
Okay, thank you, Chair Stedman. We can work on that. Of course, our information source for all these projects is the local district, and it will be a, you know, a challenge that we can try to work on and address with a report like that as to what happened to the project.
Yeah, you might get a rough idea by just looking through your old records of as they come and go, just doing a comparison on your spreadsheets. But Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got a number of questions for Mr. Merrick or Ms. Teschner. It has to do with how many of these projects that are on the current major maintenance CIP list are in REA, rural education attendance areas?
Again, through the chair, Senator Olson, could you restate your question? Is it how many are on our REAA projects?
Actually, how many projects that are on the current major maintenance capital improvement project list are in REAA regional attendance? education attendance areas.
Just hold it there for a second, just for clarity, because we're on the school construction grant fund. That's going to be the major maintenance list is the next one coming up.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So do we have questions on the grant fund before we go to the major maintenance? Okay, boys are off the hook on that list. Now we'll go on to the next list. It's a little bit longer. Major maintenance. It's handout number 7. Totals $187 million. And just for those watching at home, we want to make sure it's clear that just because it's on the list doesn't mean it's going to get funded. Clearly, there's not $187 million in the budget for this list, and there's nothing in the budget for the previous list, so as we speak today, anyway. So, if, Mr. Merrick, if you could help us with the major maintenance list and kind of what you've seen in the past couple of years and changes on that list as far as the demand for it.
Thank you, Chair Stedman. This list has, as it's presented here, is a very eclectic list of needs, I think, across the state. In terms of how any particular need is prioritized, there's a funding or a prioritization rubric that is set out in the application that you work through to establish the priority of need between all of these projects. And so it's really sometimes hard to, you know, to kind of discuss the particular project and how it ended up at 4, 6, or 20, if all of those are roof projects. But we do a lot of diligent research and information gathering with these projects as we score them. The need for projects as represented on either list, I believe, is just a fraction of what the statewide need is for school capital. And I think it is impacted somewhat by the voluntary process of districts submitting projects for consideration. It's not an impossibly hard process, but it does take someone either in the district or a consultant or a combination of people to put these applications together. We do request quite a bit of detailed information and justification for them so that we can appropriately evaluate them for cost effectiveness and for priority. The projects that are listed here are more often at some dollar values that a district may be able to find resources for, so a greater number of these projects on this list might have had some partial or complete funding already provided by the district as a way of resolving the issue as quickly as they could. And I don't have a list here for exactly which of those projects are or are not received, you know, have had prior or local funding, but it is noted in the descriptions for each of the projects.
Okay, just for those watching at home, just for clarity, we have the department rank these projects all across the state, and the legislature doesn't change the ranking, but we have a discussion on how much we're going to appropriate, and we go right down the list. And we have set this up years ago to keep out political gerrymandering of the list. So the question isn't, question or the concerns isn't to grill the administration over their ranking. We are always curious if the ranking changes, and so we understand it's a justified ranking change. But we have the debate at the table and the discussion of how much of the $187 million, we're going to put in the capital budget to send on through the system. So, Mr. Merrick, if you can give me a kind of an idea of the length of this list. Several years ago, well over maybe a decade and a half ago, we We, the legislature, along with the administration at the time, fully funded the major maintenance list. And as I recall, the next year, the list came back even larger than the one we liquidated. So there's always suspect to how big the actual list is, or the requirement is, or need is, I should say the need is in the school districts versus the school districts that actually go through the process and time to make the application and get on the list. So can you kind of give the committee what your gut feeling is on that subject?
Yes, Chair Stedman, it has been true that since the program is a voluntary program, and there is a lot of uncertainty as to whether or not there is going to be any funding available, whether a district should take the time necessary to identify these projects. One of the things that happened, I was away from the department in this position for 10 years, and in that period of time, the REAA fund was created, and that was one of the most exciting things I was looking forward to coming back to the state to help participate in, to have an index fund that you could see some program funding occurring or accumulating. And of course, we know that that's been disrupted a few times in its indexing to the debt reimbursement program. But that kind of funding mechanism gives great benefit to the capital planning process. And, it would be helpful if we had something similar on the major maintenance grant list as well, because generally speaking, the priority for funding under the REAA fund is for school construction projects. 3 years ago, it was extended that it could be also used for major maintenance projects, but the focus is on school construction. There is no way for a district to be able to forecast whether or not they can anticipate getting project funding. And that, I think, is what you were talking with the rebound effect after the bond that was intended to exhaust the major maintenance list resulted in people saying, it might be, funding might be available. We should have been there last year. Let's try to get on this year.
And does the department have a recommendation to the Finance Committee on how far down this list we should be targeting?
The department did make a recommendation to OMB as we provided the list out. I don't have that particular number in front of me.
Okay. We understand the loaded question. The simple answer is most departments is fund it all if you got the money. And I think that part of these projects are in the bond package submitted by the governor. Is that correct?
Chair Stedman, if you don't mind, I'll pass that question over to Heidi Teschner. She's been tracking the geobond bill, which provides a funding allocation, not specific projects. Heidi?
Yes, again, for the record, Heidi Teschner. The geobond bill puts $25 million towards the major maintenance grant fund, so we would work down that 22's major maintenance grant fund list to fulfill that funding should it pass.
So that would be the first six projects, cutting it off at about $22 million. Okay. We may,
that is correct.
We're going to have that discussion, obviously about how we're going to fund capital projects along with the operating structural deficit and pay a dividend and all the things we have to do. One of the concerns that we have when we're dealing with maintenance is the life of the bond versus the life of whatever we're spending the bond proceeds on. So apparently all these projects then have a life expectancy in excess of 20 plus years.
Chair Stedman, I can respond to that. I think that's fair to say that these investments we're making you know, would result in something in each system that would be equivalent of a, you know, of a renewed time period, you know, that would be appropriately associated with that system. A fire alarm system, as an example, just due to changes in code and other issues, often, you know, has a system life that is closer to 15 years, just due to changes in the technology and changes in the industries and availability of parts and that sort of thing. But generally speaking, these are all meant to renew systems to an expected full life.
And could you help the committee with Mount Edgecombe High School, how that is different than other school districts around the state and why they would or wouldn't be included in some of these lists?
Chair Stedman, this is Heidi Teschner for the record, and I will answer your question. Because Mount Edgecombe is a division of the Department of Education, they do not qualify for 1411, Lesson Statute 1411 funding. Mount Edgecombe provides every year a deferred maintenance list that we work through the statewide deferred maintenance appropriation to try to get them funding so they can work on their capital needs. In the GEO bond package, there is also an appropriation of $7.8 million for Mount Edgecombe School project needs.
Okay, so if you could help the committee maybe, you know, have that list submitted to us. And then also there's a need in that for that school to have additional classrooms.
Chair Stedman, there has been a request kind of out there that would add in a classroom expansion wing, and we can provide that description and cost to the committee as well.
That would be beneficial. And the other area of concern with the school is replacement of the boys' dorm. It's a World War II vintage barracks. And my understanding, at least last time I was in it, they had 3 to 4 boys per room and one desk. So they had to take turns if they were to study at night or late evening in their room. So there's, I'd like to have you reference or check the status of that particular need and get back to the committee, because I just have a hard time grasping 4 young high school boys with one desk instead of having them be occupied, all of them at a desk, keep them out of trouble. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you know, Heidi, what the percentage is? I'm pretty sure that the vast majority of the students that attend Mount Edgecombe are from REA school districts, but do you have a percentage of percentage from the REA school district? If not, can you get it to us? And the second question is, if there is no one looking out for Edgecombe other than maybe people at this table, but that can change with the composition of the committees, do you see a need to change state law to allow Mount Edgecombe to participate in the REA school construction fund?
Through the chair, in regard to your first question, Senator Hoffman, I don't have that percent of REAA districts represented off the top of my head, but we will definitely get back to the committee with that. In regards to your second question, we were always supportive of any mechanism that we can help get Mount Edgecombe funding for their capital needs. Whether or not that is a change in statute to allow them to go through 1411 or some other mechanism, continuing the way it is, that is a policy call to be made. But we support funding Mount Edgecombe.
Just to follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I think the committee should give serious consideration to legislation that would allow Mount Edge to participate in the REA fund and have submit legislation to make sure that that happens.
Okay. If the department could get back to us on some data on that subject matter, and we can take a look at it here at the committee and see what the desires of the committee is on that subject, if we want to go forward with a proposed statute change. And also, like, you know, to when you give us the enrollment count, which is always good to have, head count of Mount Edgecombe, the communities that the students are from, and then it's pretty easy there to aggregate it into the from the different school districts they're from and REA or otherwise. And the empty, if there's any excess capacity at Edgecombe with this current COVID issue going on. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On that point, would the, I guess to Ms. Teschner, would the department be in favor of legislation that would make it so that Mount Edgecombe was eligible for the REA fund?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, we would look at any piece of legislation that's put forward, and like I stated earlier, we are very supportive of any additional funding mechanisms that would help support the capital needs at Mount Edgecombe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up.
Actually, I don't have a follow-up on that question, but I'm ready for the other questions, if whenever you are.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Ms. Teschner, I asked earlier when we were under school construction, I meant to ask it when we were under major maintenance, how many of the projects that are on the current major maintenance CIP list are in the REA areas?
Senator Olson, through the chair, I don't have that particular breakdown in front of me. I have not done that analysis on that 108 projects, but we can definitely provide the committee with, for both major maintenance and school construction, the number of REA districts on both lists.
Thank you. Continue, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
And how many years have these projects listed been on the major maintenance list? I'm assuming you don't have that either.
Through the chair, no, we don't have that either, but in response to Chair Stedman's request earlier for the history of how long some of these projects have been off the list, we can provide that to the committee.
Is there a, Mr. Chairman, is there a cost for the school districts to prepare applications for the packets that, for the projects they want on the CIP list every year?
I believe that through the chair that there is a list. I'm going to see if Tim can respond. He knows a little bit better.
Yes, through the chair, Senator Olson, we don't know exactly what those costs are per application. Districts have a number of ways to accomplish the work. But yes, there's no doubt that it costs time. At a minimum, which is staff time in district. Plus, many districts have also advanced particular elements of planning, sort of like what Senator Hoffman was saying earlier about Nepakiok, where some planning work and design work, getting estimates done by professional estimators and so on. So many of these projects have had a significant investment by a school district. It definitely is, a process that takes some effort and could range, anywhere from, a few thousand dollars to hundreds of thousands if they were advancing design.
Because, Mr. Chairman, if I could make a comment, my office has been made aware that there have been in tens of thousands of dollars that it costs the school district every year to try and keep these lists going in the number of years they've been on it. But if I continue, Mr. Chairman, are the projects that are coming off the list because they've been, are the projects coming off the list because they've been funded either by another source that the school district has found or because the, do you have a question, answer to that, Mr. Merrig?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, If a project has been on the list in the past and has dropped off, there could be a variety of reasons for that. I don't have information that addresses that trend or in a specific way. I would like to add that the department has taken several steps to try to make the process more cost-effective for districts to participate in. Several years ago, we instituted an ability for a district to carry a project application over for one additional year if nothing significant had changed in that project. So that was an automatic way for a district to continue to be on the list just by writing a short request saying, please reuse my scores from the previous year. And the more recent time, we've introduced changes in the regulation through the bond reimbursement and grant review committee's work to extend the ability for districts to do that in some cases for up to 5 years, especially if the project is coming to us that is already completed. There's no real reason for them to have to rewrite an application every year. So we're sensitive to that, and we work with districts and the feedback that we get on this issue to try to streamline the process.
Mr. Chairman, if it's okay with you, I've got a number of other questions. I'd like to submit those questions in writing to your office as well as to the department for them to go ahead and answer.
That'd be fine. We have any other questions for the department today? They're done with their presentation, I think, and we worn them down enough on questions. Okay. Seeing no other questions from committee members, does the department have any final comments on the hearing today?
Chair Seven, we thank you for allowing us to present to you today, and we will work on the follow-up and the request that the committee has had.
Okay. Well, thank you. Yes, and I thank the department for putting the documents together, and I think the earlier part of the presentation going through the review is good for those watching outside the building and some new members in the legislature, and be beneficial as far as that goes. The real meat of the discussion today was the capital projects and the major maintenance list and how we're handling that as we've had funding constraints the last several years, and this being education being one of our primary constitutional obligations. So we are concerned as a committee on the pent-up demand in the physical structures of our school brick and mortar. So with that, I'd like to thank the department again for coming today, preparing, looking forward to all your responses. Tomorrow we're going to continue on the capital budget discussions. We're doing the groundwork for it. We're going to have discussions on deferred maintenance, some more, with the Office of Management and Budget. That'll cover throughout the state, Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, and the University of Alaska. So tomorrow morning, 9 a.m., see everybody's smiley face. We are adjourned.